Sybil Townsend steps into her first nursing job at Montgomery Family Planning Clinic in 1973 with noble intentions. Fresh from nursing school, this daughter of a respected black doctor believes she'll empower young black women through reproductive health care. But her idealism crashes against harsh reality when she meets her first patients, sisters India and Erica Williams, just 11 and 13 years old, already receiving birth control shots. The girls live in abject poverty, a wooden shanty with dirt floors and no running water, cared for by their grandmother and father, Mace, after their mother's death. Sybil is immediately troubled. Why would children this young need contraception? More disturbing still, 11-year-old India hasn't even started menstruating. As Sybil drives away from that first visit, she's shaken to her core, questioning not just their medical care, but the entire system that would administer birth control to children without addressing their basic needs. She couldn't possibly know that this case would haunt her for the next 43 years, becoming a pivotal chapter in America's dark history of reproductive injustice. Sybil's relationship with the Williams family quickly transcends professional boundaries. Shocked by their living conditions, she secures housing applications by falsely claiming to be their social worker. She takes Erica and India to Kmart, an experience revealing their deprivation when they're awestruck by the store. At her parents' home, she bathes them, cuts their matted hair, and provides a proper meal. During this caregiving, Erica confides about losing her mother, and Sybil promises not to leave without notice. These actions show Sybil's emotional investment while highlighting her naivete. Her colleague Val cautions against trying to change the family circumstances. You can't save everybody. Meanwhile, Sybil develops feelings for Mace Williams as she helps secure the family an apartment and offers to teach him to read. Their connection culminates in a kiss that feels different from anything I'd experienced before. This romantic entanglement further blurs the boundaries between Sybil's professional responsibilities and personal involvement, raising questions about saviorism versus genuine advocacy. Sybil becomes alarmed when Ty, her ex-boyfriend in medical school, questions Depo Provera's ethics at the clinic. During dinner, he reveals the drug lacks FDA approval and suggests possible experimentation, comparing it to the Tuskegee syphilis study. Disturbed, Sybil visits Miss Pope, a Tuskegee librarian who provides research on medical experimentation on black Americans. They discover that nearly 600 black men were deceived for 40 years, told they had bad blood, while researchers studied them without treatment, even after penicillin became available. Sybil fears similar experiments might be happening with Depo Provera on black women. Examining patient files, she finds troubling notes about young patients receiving injections, with assessments like confused but comfortable, poor comprehension, and unfit. Faced with this evidence, Sybil makes a pivotal choice, emptying the medication down the sink instead of injecting the Williams girls, falsifying their charts, and swearing them to secrecy. Her conscience ultimately overrides compliance. Just as the Williams family begins to thrive, new apartment, Erica in summer school, India accepted into special education, tragedy strikes. Sybil receives an urgent call about the girls getting shots at professional hospital and rushes there immediately. What she discovers becomes the novel's devastating turning point. Both girls have been sterilized without meaningful consent. 13-year-old Erica lies curled in pain, tears streaming down her face as she tells Sybil, "They done something to us. They say we can't have no babies," her usually defiant voice now trembling. The physician coldly confirms the procedures as routine. When Mace arrives, his reaction shifts from confusion to horror. Both he and his grandmother had signed consent forms they couldn't fully comprehend, having been told the girls were simply getting regular shots. This moment stands as the novel's central injustice, reproductive violence inflicted through deception, exploitation, and systemic racism. Sybil's guilt manifests as both immediate anguish and haunting long-term trauma. I should have done more. In the aftermath of the sterilizations, Civil connects with Lou Feldman, a young white lawyer who takes on the Williams case. When Senator Ted Kennedy meets with the family, Erica shares, "Me and my sister can't have no babies," revealing she prays daily for God to reverse their sterilizations. Lou discovers similar sterilization abuses nationwide, affecting poor Mexican and Black women. He shifts strategy, filing a class action lawsuit against the Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare rather than just the Montgomery Clinic. Civil rallies her fellow nurses to gather evidence about similar cases across Alabama. Lou reveals that since 1919, 33 states enacted sterilization statutes based on eugenics theories targeting those deemed unfit, including Black people, the poor, and mentally disabled. Civil realizes Mrs. Seeger likely categorized the Williams girls as unfit mothers due to their race, poverty, and youth. Judge Eric Blount ultimately rules against the defendants, prohibiting funds for sterilizing mentally incompetent persons. Despite this legal victory, Erica later confesses, "No husband, no life, no babies, I ain't never gonna be happy," revealing the profound psychological damage done. The narrative alternates between 1973 and 2016, showing how the Williams case shaped Civil's entire life. In 2016, Civil, now Dr. Townsend, is a successful physician nearing retirement, yet still carries her greatest regret, keeping the sisters' names stitched inside every white coat. When Civil learns of India's cancer, she visits the sisters after decades apart. At their modest home, she's struck by how little compensation they received for their suffering. Erica, now middle-aged and resembling her grandmother, greets Civil warmly. India appears much older despite being younger, with her second round of cancer raising unspoken questions about connections to the depot shots. Over cake, Civil remembers Mrs. Williams once feeding her stew cooked over a ground hole. She received more from their family than she ever gave. When Erica asks why she's come after all these years, Civil begins apologizing, but Erica interrupts, "There ain't no need for all that." This simple statement, whether forgiveness or acceptance, reveals how differently trauma echoes across decades. Take My Hand meditates on how we carry history, both personal and collective, and find redemption through bearing witness. Civil never married but adopted a daughter at 48 after years of therapy, her life permanently shaped by guilt from the Williams case. In the final scenes, Civil prepares to leave Montgomery, reflecting on her younger self at 23. She realizes this journey was about making peace with her past. Speaking to her now 23-year-old daughter, she hopes her daughter will benefit from their hard-earned wisdom. This knowledge, this triumph, can, if we let it, make all of us stronger. Though fiction, the novel was inspired by the real-life Ralph V. Weinberger case, where sisters aged 12 and 14 were sterilized without consent in 1973 Montgomery. This historical grounding reminds us that reproductive justice remains elusive for marginalized communities, making this an urgent commentary on bodily autonomy and our collective responsibility to dismantle harmful systems.